Welcome to Simpaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien. Hello.
Aaron O'Brien, yes.
O'Brien, yes.
O'Brien.
The O'Brien is here. Dave, I told you off mic here that I went to see...
The best movie ever invented.
Yeah, not really. I got to see Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom.
How many worlds of Oscars will it win?
Negative worlds. This is probably the dumbest movie I've seen in a while.
Is this what happened when Thanos snapped his fingers? All the bad people went to this movie?
I don't know what happened to this movie. I'm just going to put a warning. Unless you just like stupid schlock of like dinosaurs going crazy and killing people and volcanoes exploding. Sounds exciting, but the storyline is just so banal. Just keep away from it.
Banal? I think I should have some fiber.
Yes, you should, Bane.
Fiber. If you want a more in-depth breakdown on Jurassic World, go check out Red Letter Media's YouTube channel and their Half in the Bag episode about Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom. I've not seen the movie. I don't plan on it, but watching their talk about it is all I needed to see, and I could enjoy it vicariously through their eyes and not even have to see the movie.
Yeah, don't go see it. Like I said, unless you just like a stupid movie of dinosaurs, you know, just being crazy. I mean, the graphics are great. You know, CGI, awesome.
If you're cool with turning your brain off for 2.5 hours, go see it.
Otherwise,
spend 45 minutes and watch Best of the Worst. Half in the Bag.
And like I was saying to you also before is... I didn't plan this, but I watched the original Jurassic Park, directed by Steven Spielberg, just before, and it was so well done. Shot by shot, there's so many interesting shots and in how he frames things and how he cuts the scenes. And then, you know, and then I see this, I'm just like, there's no comparison.
Yeah.
So, yeah, whatever. But we are talking about an extinction event on this episode.
Yeah, so we are talking about extinction. How about genocide?
Well, we'll have to get into that soon, that debate. But we are talking about the Enterprise episode Dear Doctor, Season 1, Episode 13, and it first aired January 23rd, 2002. It's a fun episode, but it makes you think, and it's a little slower plotting. Like, the story is not very fast-moving.
No, not at all.
It's weird, too, because it's like we're so used to, like, you know, TV being so snappy, like, and then this happens, and this happens, and this happens. Now this is sort of like... Just kind of following Dr. Phlox around the Enterprise and what's going on in his life.
I'm
going
to feed my pets. I'm going to eat my pet's food. That worm was good.
Oh, God, that was so gross. Yeah, but the pacing, don't you feel this pacing is so unsettling in what we're used to nowadays?
Oh, it's definitely unsettling. And maybe it was that way for a reason, because it's kind of a dark episode, kind of.
It doesn't start off. You don't think it's going to be a dark episode.
No, not at all. It's. I mean, and I don't think they even intended it to be a dark episode. I think they intended it to be like just, oh, well, this is what Star Trek is, and this is what the Prime Directive is, even though the Prime Directive doesn't exist yet.
Right. Right. Yeah, this is sort of a precursor to the Prime Directive, and maybe why Prime Directive was written at some point. But should we get started and start just breaking this episode down?
Let's do it.
Well, we get Dr. Phlox coming into sick bay or med lab, and he's feeding all his little creatures. And like you said, at one point he eats one of these caterpillars or worms or whatever you want to call them, slugs, grubs. It was so gross.
Yes, after he's feeding, I'll try my pet's food.
I don't dislike Phlox, but there's just something about him that just is so unsettling to me sometimes. I don't know what it is.
In general, I like Phlox a lot. In theory, I like Phlox a lot, but I really don't like him. I mean, I don't like his decisions this episode. I think he's still an interesting character, and I think we learn a lot about his character as far as the Nobulan life is like, which is really interesting, and it's nice seeing his perspective, but yes. I can't support his decision in this, so I kind of don't like him in this episode, but in general, I really like Phlox and the Nobulans as a people.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something about Phlox that just kind of like rubs me the wrong way, and not like not awful. Just makes I've just never really loved him. I like the idea of him, but I don't know. Whatever. I should go on. So, anyways, so after we have that quick scene, which is a strange teaser, because I guess we're just going to see like a different version or something that we didn't expect from Phlox. Maybe that's what we're seeing here. Him eating that grub.
Foreshadowing.
Kind of like, yeah, like this is not. Whoever you think he is, he's not quite what you are, or what you think you expect. He's an alien.
Oh, that's a good point. I like that.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. I didn't really think about it until right now. But anyways, so the episode starts. Hoshi walks in, and she has a letter that he keeps on correspondence with this Dr. Jeremy Lucas, which is a human serving on Phlox's home planet on Denobula. And he's kind of like, they're like pen pals.
And this is the doctor that we see in the Augment trilogy, which we talked about, the embryonic popsicle saga. It's yes. The one where his life is threatened and Dr. Phlox spills all the beans, including the jumping ones.
If you want to hear us go over Borderlands, Codeland Station 12, and the Augments, that is episode 90.
Ooh, wow.
I know. Did you think it was that far back?
No, I didn't. I felt like that was more recently. That's like 80. That's 80 episodes. That's almost as many episodes ago as. Oh man.
I know it's a long time ago. I know I didn't think so. I was like, man, that was a long time ago. But anyways, yeah, episode 90, we go over that and we get to meet Jeremy Lucas in those episodes, and that is a fantastic three-parter for Enterprise. But anyways,
he's Pliers, the guy from Wing Commander. I love him. Yes.
You keep bringing Pliers up.
I love
But anyways, so he gets a letter from Jeremy Lucas, and he's kind of just telling him what's going on Denobula. I guess it's not mating season, it's breeding season on Denobula.
Yes, breeding season.
And
the little babies are being born.
And there's just a lot of craziness going on that I guess he's basically says, you make humans look like simple...
single-celled organisms.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand how that works as far as pregnancy goes. Like, that's just, why would they make it so complicated?
I was saying even that there was some, like, some kind of fighting going on as well. I don't know what that's about, but.
Protests. Pregnancy protests.
I'm not going to be pregnant. You have to be pregnant. So,
You carry the child. You carry the child.
No, you do it.
There's six of us in this family.
So, and then Phlox starts writing a letter back to him, telling him basically what's going on in the Enterprise and how he's become very interested in the humans and how they, you know, how their view of the world. And they kind of show the one part where Archer brings in Porthos, and Porthos has been, I guess, acting weird, but he's been feeding him cheese. And I guess cheese doesn't go well with Porthos.
Oh, poor Porthos.
I know. And so he's like, he anthropomorphized Porthos as a person. He's like, and he talks to him. He's like, I don't even think the dog even understands what he's saying, but whatever.
And he said something like, I talk to my bats or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then we get the introduction to Elizabeth Cutler, which is a crew member there. And
Elizabeth Cutler.
Yeah, she seems to have like a romantic interest in him, and they take him. She takes him to like the movies.
She wants to be friends with Benefits.
Well, they're not friends with Benefits, really, but they are definitely.
I think that's what she's implying, though. Later on the episode,
yeah, she's like, let's see where it goes.
Yeah, I don't want to be wife number four, but I wouldn't mind fooling around.
Yeah, and she gives him a little kiss on the cheek, and so he's like, "Oh, that's weird." And we also find out that Denobulans don't like to be touched.
If we only had Duchess here, she would be asking, "What does a Denobulan penis look like?"
Yes, well,
I will ask for her.
I think Elizabeth Cutler is going to be the first to find out.
Where no Cutler has gone before.
Right, right. So that's sort of like the precursor. And then what we find is that the Enterprise runs into a pre-warp vessel, which is by the Vlachians. And the Vlachians have been traveling for a year. And when they're two very faint life signs, they bring them aboard. And they find that these species have some kind of disease that they're not doing too well. Dr. Phlox looks at them and basically says they have this genetic disease and there's not much he can do about it. And but they were taking their ship out to look for help with other warp-capable species. And they said they ran into two before, the Fringi, and he said to somebody else, but I don't know who it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And DePaul says, she doesn't know, the Vulcans don't know either of those species. So
how did they not run into the Fringi?
I don't know. It seems odd. Maybe just they ran into a Fringi far out. It just happened to hit upon their planet or something.
Maybe, because it just seems like the Fringi should just try to monopolize on it like they did in the Delta Quadrant.
I know. We got a cure for you. You don't have a cure. You're just selling us sugar pills.
Oh, wow.
The old placebo effect.
I wonder if that'll fix a genetic issue.
No, I don't think so. The interesting, too, is a side point, is Hoshi. We see Hoshi trying to figure out the Vlachian's language. And we keep running into that. It's where they don't have an automatic translation for everything. So I think that's interesting. This is we don't see that too often in Star Trek, and here we're seeing it for the first time. So
we see it a lot more in Enterprise, though, because Hoshi is the manual translator.
Yeah, I like it. And we also see where her and Phlox are sitting at in the mess hall, and she's trying to learn to Nobulan. So,
which is why when we talked about that Ray Wise episode of Voyager, that I thought that was so strange. The universal translator went out because that's an Enterprise thing. I don't think I've ever heard of that ever happening.
Yeah,
in any other post TOS Star Treks.
Absolutely. So, but Archer consults with DePaul after the Vlachians say, "Would you help us?" And Archer says, "Yeah, okay, we'll help you." So they take a trip to the Vlachis, and they go to their planet, and they come down to their hospital, and they start. Phlox just is, getting to know the lay of the land, basically finding out what's involved with their disease and what's happening on the planet, and collecting all a bunch of information and whatever you want to call it, specimens for him to analyze.
And then they find out there's another species on the planet who's also humanoid, and they're called the Mink. And they get hunted for their fur quite often.
So soft.
Very soft. They scalp them.
They shag like a minx, baby. Yeah. Yeah, so the mink are, they're kind of portrayed as like these simple-minded, almost like Neanderthal type of...
borderline mentally retarded.
Yeah, like subspecies kind of race. And it's funny because once the crew gets to know the mink, they kind of feel like they're being treated unfairly by the Vlachians.
They're not allowed to have fertile land, but they get provided pretty much everything, shelter, food, and all that stuff like that. They're just kind of used as mules.
Bread and circuses.
Absolutely.
So anyway.
Or the Orions. We need the Orions. Bread and circuses. Well, that's what Emperor Giorgio is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get those two races, and Phlox is kind of interested in the fact that there's the two different species that have evolved on the planet, which he was he said obviously most planets that come upon, there's only one dominant sentient species. So it's interesting find for that planet. And so he's looking into it, and Phlox decides he's going to focus a little bit on the Mank and get some information by going to one of their villages and taking blood samples and all sorts of other medical information on them, see if he could find some reasons why they aren't getting this illness. And they start and this is where the crew members start feeling the mink are being treated fairly by the Vlachians.
Yeah, it's Miss Cutler is they shouldn't be treated mean. And Phlox is this is just how things are. And he was super indifferent to it, which is he's kind of chill about it, which I didn't mind at this point.
Well, and that's the thing. And then he brings up the point because she's interested in him and saying, do you know that I'm married and I have three wives.
I have three wives and they each have three husbands or two other husbands, including me.
Right. And she and he's not doing that, I think, to shock her. I think he's trying to figure out what she wants from him. Well, but he's trying to say, like, look, you like me. And you know who I am, but you know that I come from a completely different culture. So you can't totally judge my culture because we have a totally different way of being on my planet as well.
Yeah, but you know, it's just like, oh, I don't care about that. She's like, I've got a boner, I've got a lady boner for you. That changes how culturally sensitive I can be.
I guess.
But it's an interesting scene, and you know, the reason he's testing this, telling her this more so than explaining the reason between is he has DePaul come in for like a toothache or something earlier, and he's talking to DePaul. And he's like asking, like, you know, how does she think humans deal with interspecies relationships? And she's like, humans are stupid. They wouldn't understand. They wouldn't be able
basically,
to deal.
They're not mature enough.
Humans are too animalistic to be able to enjoy an interspecies relationship. So, right. Or they're too dumb. They're not enlightened enough. So I think Phlox is trying to, like, you know, let her down softly, I guess, because of T'Pol's warnings.
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's trying to let her down softly, or do you think he's just trying to get the lay of the land? Because I think he's confused. I think he's genuinely confused by what she's doing.
Maybe a little bit of both, because you know, it's like, you know, because T'Pol gave him that warning. I think he's trying to like play out all his cards so that she understands. But you know, that's risky because if she's like, ooh, that's weird, and she could drop it.
Good point. Well, anyway, so then we get back to they are trying to Phlox has been looking at this this disease and seeing if he can find anything that can basically cure it. At some point while he's trying to do this and Phlox is working really hard trying to find a cure for them, he does find medicine that can kind of alleviate the pain, but it doesn't cure their disease. One of the original, if you want to call him astronaut or Vlachian astronaut, that they came across, Archer goes and visits, and he asks for Enterprise's
warp drive.
Can
I have some warp drive, please?
Because, like, basically, if you guys can't solve this disease, maybe we can go and find other races or species that can give us help.
Everyone's going to help you, Mr. Man.
Which Archer keeps running into. This is the one time they don't actually attack the Enterprise. Which most of the time he goes, "Oh, let's be friends." Like, "Yo, yeah, we'll be friends. Let's kill them all."
You can be friends with my torpedo launcher.
Yeah, that happens pretty regularly for Archer and the Enterprise there.
Poor Archer.
I know. I always feel bad because he does want to be friendly with everybody. And he has this conversation with T'Pol about it. And he's even brings up the point. It's like they don't even know how dangerous antimatter can be. So
that line made me think of that Voyager episode we talked about where Friendship One. They sent out all the schematics to do antimatter. I suppose that happened beforehand because Archer is all of a sudden worried about how antimatter could be.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah,
they were just giving this information out. They just put on the warp schematics on a probe and just sent it out into space. And now he's like, maybe we shouldn't do that.
Maybe they gave better cautionary information in their schematics.
Maybe the Vulcans like bitch slapped them after they did that. Like right after first contact, they just sent out this probe. But they're like, look, here's your antimatter. Here's all this.
Be our friends.
Or maybe Zefram Cochrane sent it out into space.
Maybe he did.
Before the Vulcans landed.
And before he ran into that creature down on that planet.
Metamorphosis, yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, anyways, but he decides that he can't give them the warp technology. It's just not, they're not ready for it.
You can't handle the antimatter.
Well, it's a good point. You know, it's like, I don't think they are ready for it. I mean, even if they could have warp capability, it doesn't mean that if they go to the Klingons are just going to take over their planet and kill them all or enslave them all. So anyways, so Phlox has been working.
That'd be a pretty bad deal for the Klingons, right? So you got these race that are just dying.
I think they'd take the Vlachians out and they leave the Manc to be their slaves.
Probably. They just fast exterminate them. But I just think that it'd be, I just had this hilarious thing in my head where, like, the Klingons made all the Valakians and the slaves, and they're all, like, becoming decrepit and falling apart, and, like, Klingons are being extra mean to them because they're not, like, doing their work. Like, quit being lazy.
Right. Right.
Targ is licking you.
Well, next we get a scene between Phlox and Archer. Archer's been stressing out about helping the Valakians, and Phlox comes into the mess hall where Archer's sitting, and they start talking about that. And Phlox says that he thinks it was incorrect for them to help the Valakians. The Valakians are on the downside, on the downside of their evolution, and they're going to move into an extinction event. And that the Menk are on the upswing, and that he's saying that he thinks they're going to become the dominant species in the next couple thousands of years. And he says that the disease is a flaw in the Valakian DNA, and they've just reached their evolutionary dead end, that they can't go any further. But Archer still wants him to cure the Valakians, and Phlox says that he already has a cure. And the next day, Archer comes into the med lab, and Phlox, it seems like Phlox was ready to give him the cure. I mean, did you feel like he was going to, and then all of a sudden Archer says, I'm not going to do it?
I felt like he was going to resist giving him the cure as much as possible, even if Archer was asking for it.
Because he kind of, like, in his letter to Dr. Lucas, he was sort of saying, like, you know, I have to trust my captain that he's going to do the right thing. And even if I don't agree with it.
But as soon as Archer came in, he's like, I agree with you. Or is like, I don't agree with you, but we'll do it your way. Phlox was still like, well, even if you said, you know, I would have still tried to ask you to, you know, do it my way. So I feel like he wasn't 100% open to it. I felt like he was going to resist as much as possible.
I mean, I think they were all conflicted, period. And then it comes to, Arch comes down to the planet and talks to the Valakians once more.
He says they're not going to... Straight up lies, so we don't know how to cure you.
Basically, he's saying that they're not going to give him warp technology, and he's getting all the information for the medicine to ease the symptoms, but it's not going to obviously cure the disease, and that they got to learn to finish to help themselves. They decide to leave. So Phlox kind of ends his letter, and he says that he's relieved that he could, you know, trust Archer in everything that he thought was the best thing to do. And that's kind of how the episode kind of ends up.
Yeah, it just kind of ends up in this like weird place where they just condemned an entire people to die.
Right. It's a heavy episode in the end. And like I said, it's so slow plotting that we don't
expect it.
Yeah, right. Dave, how do you feel about this episode?
I don't know why they wrote an episode of Star Trek where they're like, oh, genocide's cool. It's okay. It's okay to be Hitler. It's okay to let you know, exterminate an entire race. That's fun. Let evolution be your guide. Evolution's not a person, place, or a thing. It's basically an idea or an observation. You can't hurt an observation's feelings. You're already there. You've already interfered. The Prime Directive doesn't exist yet. You found a cure. So, like, if you were on your high horse about curing this race, why did you even research a cure? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like, well, I'm going to do my best to find a cure, and now that I have it, I'm going to withhold it from them. That just seems like a super dick way to handle things. It's like he should have just been like, no, I'm not going to. Like, if he wanted to have this, like, moral high ground, he's like, well, I'm not going to research a cure. Mm. I mean, that would have been a better way to do it. Or I would have preferred him not to have found a cure. That way it's like, okay, we can't do anything, and maybe make this more of a warp drive Prime Directive sharing technology episode versus like, let's trust in evolution because we know Star Trek does evolution so well. a threshold.
Yeah, threshold. I know. Yeah, but
Star Trek doesn't understand
an outlier.
I feel like Star Trek's really bad about evolution, like really, really bad about it, and like how it works and whatnot.
Yeah, you think so?
Definitely, you know, Threshold, everyone knew the dinosaur was kind of weird. The episode where everyone's following the graham crackers, and they find out this race was like seeded all the other races in the Milky Way galaxy. So it's just kind of like, huh, they're kind of like wishy-washy in how evolution works in Star Trek, and very inconsistent, and they act like it's a person that needs to be respected versus like, if you can fix it, fix it. You know, I don't understand why they're like just withholding this technology when, you know, like I said at the beginning, if he had this moral high ground, why didn't he say so at the beginning?
Yeah. And you think about it with evolution, even on our planet, like the fact that we do animal husbandry, where we breed certain animals to our benefit. We mold them, you know, certain cows give more milk. We favor those cows get more food, get more care, and they survive.
Or better cuts of beef.
Or faster horses, stronger horses. We make sure that they are given more care. They're bred more often. We have like the Kentucky Derby and stuff like that, where you take the winner of the race to breed with it is like you have to pay tons of money to get that, basically the chance to breed with that horse.
So we do stuff like that with species all the time, like
we're not even talking about plants. So I mean that's another issue too. I mean, we do that all the
quote unquote interfere. It's not interfering. It's just making it better. Like I don't. It's
well, I don't want to say making better for humans per se, but it doesn't mean anything for the big picture of things. It's the species could have gone either way. You know, the same thing with dogs. I mean, they speculate dogs came from wolves
and then they just bred out certain characteristics of wolves, and they got like millions of different kinds of dog breeds now. So
right, and that kind of idea that we have, like our man's best friend used to be our worst enemies. So you know, it took you know
a lot of breeding.
Thousands and thousands of years. So so we're constantly interfering with evolution on all sorts of levels. And even how we treat ourselves. I mean, what we do for ourselves. We try to find a cure for cancers, and try to find a cure for other diseases. That's part of evolution saying, you ain't working too good. And it, you know, and that's cruel to say, because obviously nobody wants to see anybody die of disease or cancer. But it is part of,
except for doctors.
But you know what I mean. It's
I know. I'm just
a life cycle. So
I'm poking fun at doctors for being dicks in this episode.
Well, yeah. So I do have an issue with that somewhat as well. I don't know.
So the crux of this question is, do you believe this is genocide or not? Because I've gone to the ye olde Wikipedias. Mm-hmm. And let's just read what genocide is. Mm-hmm. Just to be clear, we're defining things right and just not pulling things out of our ass. Genocide is the intentional action to destroy a people, usually defined as ethnic, national, racial, religious group, in whole or in part. The hybrid word genocide is the Greek word genos, which is race or people, and the Latin word side, which is the act of killing. Mm-hmm. United Nations Genocide Convention, which was established in 1948, defines genocide as an act committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnic, or racial group. Having a cure, knowingly withholding it, is most definitely condemning the entire Wallachian race to die. They are actively committing genocide by withholding what they have.
Is it genocide?
I believe so.
I don't think it's done in ill intent. I think it's more of, I don't know. When I think of genocide, it's more of...
It's an intentional action to destroy a people. They intentionally withheld that medicine, so they're intentionally destroying them.
They're not trying to intentionally destroy them. They're just trying to let them take their own pathway into, if it's extinction, it's extinction. But
they had a method to prevent it. It was in their hands, and they just said no.
Yeah,
That's intentional. That's intentionally being malicious. That's intentional maliciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're playing it up to being like, oh, let's let this invisible idea that has no feelings or thoughts, you know, rule over the fate of these people who do have feelings and thoughts.
Right.
It's just it's disgusting. Kind of. It's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, and I have been trying to think about what Phlox is trying to what's his issue with this.
Well, the thing is, he was so indifferent to the mink. He was trying to explain the Ensign Cutler that this is just how it is, and that there's no reason to feel bad for them because they're cared for, they're well cared mm-hmm. for, they're not being mistreated. They're just that's just how their society is. he had no skin in the game. He didn't care. And all of a sudden, he's like, nope, the Mink are going to be number one.
Yeah, right, right.
So his motivations aren't even super clear.
And I have a hard time understanding how easy the cure would be. Is it just basically, you know, give them this information and they can synthesize a drug or do some kind of genetic manipulation? Yeah, I don't know. I hesitate on genocide only for the fact that it's not done maliciously. It's more of just like let nature take its own course.
But it's, if you have something in your hand and you're not giving it to them and you're lying to them about having a cure, I feel like that's malicious. Like Marshall's like, yeah, we can't do anything, sorry. But they had something. They had it in their hands. I don't know. I feel like it is malicious. I mean, I know that they play it in the episode like it's not. They're trying to let this big invisible force, you know, decide for them. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they were already there. They're already interfering. Like we said earlier, like, we interfere with how things change here all the time, with breeding horses for speed or cattle for better cuts of beef. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
They're already there. They're already interfering. There's no prime directive. There's no reason for them not to give them this other than some weird, strange, misguided, quote-unquote, morals that Phlox feels like he couldn't violate.
Yeah, yeah.
What happened to do no harm? Like, well, you're harming the entire race by not curing them.
Right, and Archer even says, he goes, you know, that it's your job to come in and fix things when, you know, medically. I still hesitate from the idea of genocide. Genocide seems more of like an act of war or something to that nature, that you're trying to eliminate a whole group of people on purpose. This is him just kind of being like, you know, I'm not going to help you, but I'm not necessarily harming you either.
I feel like they are. I mean, by withholding the cure, they're harming them.
I don't get me wrong. I think it's kind of
dick
it's
move.
It's kind of shitty. Yeah, yeah. It's pretty shitty. I don't know. This is a hard one to swallow.
I 100% sign on that Phlox was saying, hey, we should do genocide. And
Phlox is a genocidal maniac.
He's a genocidal maniac. And Archer signed, and Archer co-signed that letter.
Gentle doctor committed genocide.
Archer notarized it.
Yeah, he's like, and done. Stamp of approval.
Stamp of approval. Genocide's cool.
Ah, man, I don't know.
I'm Hitler today.
I don't know. I just don't feel the same way. I don't think it's right.
Genocide doesn't have to be active. This is passive genocide. You're coming from the perspective that they didn't do anything physically to harm them, because you're coming from the point that, you know, where Hitler, like, you know, put all the Jews in concentration camps and death camps and like that. He was actively trying to weed them out. But by not doing anything, this is passive genocide. Because they have something, they can fix it, but they're just not going to give it to them. They're not actively hurting them. They're just passively not helping them when they clearly can. Yeah. So genocide is passive genocide. It's not anger. I mean, I understand where you're coming from, where you're saying that they're not doing anything malicious per se, like Hitler did. But the end result is the same.
Okay, but like, let's look at a different angle too. Like, what if you have like an older person? Okay, let's say you can stop people from dying of old age. I know people don't just die of old age. They have different, you know, breakdowns. They're either get sick and their bodies can't fight the illness, or they have a cancer, something happens that they slowly, their body deteriorates, that they die. What if you could just eliminate that? Do we eliminate and let old people live forever? Which sounds wonderful, but the other side of it, then you're just going to have overcrowding of the planet with a lot of old people. I'm you know, maybe that's a shitty way to look at it.
It's not genocide, because the race is still moving on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's an interesting proposal. We just have lots more bingo. We'll have an entire economy based on bingo. It'll be a new country called bingo.
And the popular pastime of yelling at young people to get off your lawn.
Yes, like, so this is what we do. All the old people stay alive forever. So we create a new country called Bingo, where all they do is play bingo, and the whole
and their national anthem would be
B-I-N-G-O-P-I-N-G. And you know, they just go there and they play bingo for the rest, and then the whole economy is based on bingo. Like they can, you know, trade goods and stuff based on bingo. So I think we can figure that out. I'll be fine. I'll have to get a big empty piece of land to be the biggest nursing home of all time.
Yeah,
it'll work.
I don't know. Yeah, it'll work. Don't worry. We'll raise Atlantis and put them all there.
Hey, you know. And the old people also like to gamble, some of them. So, I mean, you can, like, just put a bunch of Indian casinos on there, too. Like, look at all the money we can generate with all these old people.
Okay, but going back to Phlox and Archer's dilemma, I mean, you know, Archer brings up the point is that it's not his right to interfere, and, you know, he's not the one who should judge in who's to live or die. And
kill all the doctors. We don't need to fix people ever.
I don't know. It's one of those things, like, you almost become like a godlike, you know, entity where you could be like, I'm going to be the person who's going to choose who's going to live or die. I don't know. I mean, that's a heavy thing too. I mean, he could have given them the warp technology, and he decided not to do that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I almost wish this episode would have focused more on the warp thing and not this cure thing, because mm-hmm. the cure thing just makes me kind of angry at Phlox and at Archer for, like, this passive genocide. Mm-hmm. Like, they're condemning a race to die. I mean, I don't know what else you call that.
Well, and obviously we run into this again. I mean, we've talked about the whole Prime Directive ad nauseum of their 5-part episodes.
Well, their 5-part Prime Directive primer.
And, you know, this is obviously Archer says we need some kind of directive. But
yes.
But you don't want to be, as a ship captain, you don't want to be the person who's going to play God with a whole planet. Even you can't see what all the things that could possibly happen, good or bad, by curing or not curing them.
I don't know. I just feel like this planet should be called the underdog planet. So the Volokians die, the Mank rise up, and then another species rises up behind the Mank, and they're called the Stink. and then the Mank come up with some kind of, like, genetic disorder they can't. Oh, let's call the Mank. Let's let the Stink rise up. I don't know. I'm just like, I don't know. Just, if you can fix something and you're already there, just fix it. I mean, there's... It's part of the doctor's mandate. I mean, like, you know, it's, I don't know. I don't think it's playing God. You've got, you're just trying to, it's like, just view it like a plague, a genetic disorder. That's basically a plague wiping out the nation. I mean, like, you're a doctor, you have a doctor on your ship who's got this great vast knowledge. Let him help. And the doctor was helping. And then all of a sudden, as soon as he gets the cure, he's like, no, I'm not going to help anymore. That's what bothers me so much, that I just wish he would have just said, no, we shouldn't interfere. And then they could have become a, you know, Prime Directive warp drive episode. But he's like, oh, let's do the cure. Let's do the cure. Let's do the cure. Let's do the cure. And then all of a sudden they have got the cure. And it's like, oh, well, nah, we're just going to be dicks. You can't have it, guys. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. I mean, it is precarious.
It's hard to like Archer and Phlox in this episode. Really, really hard.
Yeah,
I mean, it is difficult for me personally, because I just, and the thing is, like, they some of the people think this is like one of the greatest episodes of, you know, Voyager. Like John Billingsley, the guy who plays Phlox. Like, look, I was reading the Memory Alpha. He said he looks back at this episode as probably one of his favorites, and I'm just like,
well, he has a prime.
Sure.
I mean, he's the center of the whole thing. I mean, it's all Phlox this. I mean, even Archer kind of only has like a couple lines compared to Archer. So,
yeah.
I mean, compared to Phlox.
So it's his first Phlox episode, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. It's very, it's a hard one to try to process for sure. I'm not really sure how I feel about it. Because if you look at the – and we've deconstructed the Prime Directive, which obviously was not in effect here during Enterprise, but that – I mean, the Prime Directive doesn't make a lot of sense anyways, because, like we said, if the planet and the species on the planet was supposed to go its own natural direction, just showing up at the planet
– changed it.
Changed it. And you at the Enterprise or any ship that shows up at a planet is part of – the universe, and it's the natural course of what the universe is. The universe intended, you know, us to build spaceships
and then find this other planet. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of how we came down in the Prime Directive episode, where it's like, we're, you know, if we're there, it might as well help, right?
Right. But the only issue, the only big issue is that who's to say that if, let's say, Archer gave the Vlachians the cure, the Vlachians didn't turn out to be like the next Klingons or Romulans or something to that nature. You know, we just don't know. Like, maybe what he's, you know, what he saved becomes, you know, a terrible thing.
I really wish the Mank were a race that we got to see in DS9 or in...
It wouldn't be highly evolved enough. And, you know, what's even interesting about what you're saying there is that, so they're saying in like 200, 300 years, the Vlachians would be basically extinct. I mean, they still would be around.
Well, I just think it would be interesting if they ran into like a Next Gen or DS9, or they ran into the Mink, and then, like, you know, we had this whole episode to kind of like, oh, look, this is how the Mink happened. You know, yeah. Like that would have kind of been a cool tie-in.
I think there'd be more like the, what's it called? The
Packled.
Packleds, yeah.
Can you make us go?
Yeah, I know. Maybe they're like an offshoot of the Packleds.
They kind
of
look like Packleds. Yeah. Yes. Maybe that's the Mink.
They should have just called them Packleds, and nobody understood.
That would have been fantastic. That would have been great because they're kind of mentally retarded. Yes. Yeah, oh man.
Yeah.
That's great. That's a great theory. Maybe the Packled came after the Mink. That's what I'm saying. Like the.
It's not enough time.
Hey, well, the Romulans developed permanent frowns in only 100 years, so yeah, I'm pretty sure we get some Packleds pretty quick.
I don't know.
They're like a sub branch of the Mank.
It takes a couple thousands of years for like any kind of real evolution to take place. That's one thing I never really understood, the timeline between the Romulans and the Vulcans. How long the time between the departure of the Romulans from Vulcan to Romulus. Like, how long was that? I don't know.
I feel like when we talked with Stuart, it was only like, I think we decided it was like a little over 1,000 years.
Or 1,000 years, not a long time for that head thing to show up.
Oh, but it only shows up in 100 years because we had it in TOS and we didn't have it.
Well, TOS is different because makeup wasn't figured out.
Oh, but, in the 2009 movie, they didn't have the permanent frowns. So, I mean, props to J.J. Abrams for not giving them the stupid permafrowns. So yeah, it's just this is the TNG era stuff where they've got the stupid permafrowns. So TOS and Enterprise, the J.J. reboots. So, I mean, the people complain about those, but I give J.J. a huge thumbs up for no permafrowns on the Romulans.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's hard. It's hard to try to figure all this stuff out. Like, what, you know.
What do you think about my idea that this was more like a Prime Directive wrestling with giving them warp drive? Like, because it's very like almost a footnote of the episode.
It is basically Dear Doctor is the, I don't know what you want to call it, the prequel or something to the Prime Directive.
Well, this is actually in the Prime Directive Memory Alpha, and we skipped over this episode purposely when we did our Prime Directive thing, because in Star Trek canon, Prime Directive doesn't exist at this point, so we purposely skipped that episode. But this is obviously the episode. This is like the seeds to make the Prime Directive.
Right. And, you know, obviously we didn't touch on it because there's no Prime Directive during Enterprise. But the other side of it is that it doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't when you really pull away from it and take the long view of the whole thing. There's not a lot that makes sense of the Prime Directive, other than you can't go gallivanting throughout the galaxy and play God with other, you know, civilizations that are not developed. And even, let's face it, even warp capable technology or races aren't always that developed anyways.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing is, which is interesting, is like, you know, T'Pol even said it at one point in this episode, well, they've already met two other warp capable races. It's not going to interfere too much if we go see them because they've already been contaminated, you know, knowing other aliens exist and knowing warp technology exists. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, even if the Prime Directive was in effect full force in this episode, I still think they should have cured them, because, I mean, they've already gone through the interference. They've already met. They know you exist. So, be a dick to be a dick? I mean, I just, you know, and that's the thing with the Prime Directive that we always came to when we talked about it in that 5-part series. It's like, you know, once they've been discovered, do you just, like, pretend you don't exist, or they pretend they don't exist? Like, you know, what's the protocol for once they know? Because they did have a spaceship. Yeah. It's not like you know.
It was a little more. It seemed a little more advanced than what we have. You know.
Sure, but I mean that's a whole other thing. You know, the whole Prime Directive initially was like, well, what if you don't initiate contact with non-warp faring races? But even though they didn't have warp, they were still out in space exploring. So I mean, like, do you just ignore them even if they're already in space? It's kind of, and they're in sublight, you know, speed ships looking around. I mean, like, do you just like pretend you don't exist? It's I mean, there's a whole new subcategory of, you know, things to run into that we didn't even consider in that series. Because we just considered warp and non-warp, but we didn't even talk about space-faring non-warp, because this is one of the few times we run into that.
Well, yeah, I mean, and here we have, I mean, it's a different idea, but when the Enterprise runs into the Botany Bay kind of thing, you know, I mean, obviously that was an Earth ship, so, and they were like, wow, what's it doing so far out here? But that technically is a sub-warp, you know, vessel that shouldn't have been approached.
Well, according to Riker, it's what Riker said in the when we were looking through the Prime Directive on Memory Alpha. Riker said if it's something from Earth, the Prime Directive doesn't apply because it's already from Earth.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you run into a ship, shouldn't you at least investigate?
I feel like you should.
Yeah.
Because the whole Prime Directive, like we said in the Prime Directive episode, it's like it goes against the Star Trek mandate, you know, seek out new life and new civilizations, except if they only have warp.
Right, exactly. Well, and then, you know, I don't know. So if you have the subwarp species that doesn't have the warp capabilities, it doesn't mean that they don't have other things to offer, but that seems to be the benchmark. And if they have warp, aren't they going to somehow or other run into you? And I don't know.
It's at odds with itself. Having the Prime Directive versus the motto to seek out new life and new civilizations, they're very much at odds with each other.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons I think we picked the Prime Directive to talk about way back when was we didn't understand it totally ourselves either in a lot of ways, because you know, tons of examples where the Prime Directive is broken, tons of examples where it is upheld, and you're like, well, why didn't you just save those people? Because you did that opposite on the other side, you know, 10 episodes ago or whatever. You save those people, you let these people die, you know, that kind of thing. So we wanted to dive into that because we didn't understand.
And I don't know if we really understand still. I think our basic final deduction was we need someone who's well-versed in foreign affairs, because that's basically what the Prime Directive basically becomes in its most basic form. It's basically just public relations with foreign nations, basically.
Right.
Because a lot of it just doesn't make sense.
Maybe we should throw it out to people listening if you have a different view. Why would Archer and Phlox have this decision, and what would make that legitimate?
Yeah, absolutely, guys. What do you guys think? Do you think Archer and Phlox were fully justified in withholding the cure that they spent the entire episode developing? Or do you agree with me that this was a, you know, at least passive genocide, if not fully active genocide?
I mean, you could have just taken the Enterprise and just blowing the planet up.
Yeah, might as well, right? I mean, they're going to die anyway.
You're all going to die anyways. Just
the Mink will become the Pakled. They'll change their name.
Yeah, right, exactly.
They're like they
we
called us the Mink
anyways.
We're going to call ourselves the Pakled. Oh, that's great. That way they don't even have to be different. And that's why they don't know how to make anything work, because they just inherited all the stuff from the Vicarians.
Yeah, everything just starts falling apart, and they're like, maybe we press this button, we'll start flying.
Oh, man, this is perfect. We figured out the Pakled origin story. It's right here.
It could have been the origin of the Pakleds for sure.
Oh, this is awesome.
I don't know.
It makes me like this episode so much more.
I'm interested to hear a counter argument that feels valid. So I don't know. I'd love to hear if anybody wants to write in or you know, write in on the Facebook group or send in a recording or any of that stuff, just to let us know, you know, what if you have a counter argument to Dear Doctor and their decision. I'd love to hear it.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to hear it too. I want to hear what you guys think, and if you think it's genocide too, let us know that too. I'd love to hear what you guys think. You can email us.
I don't think it's genocide. Sorry,
man. That's good. I mean, like, you don't think genocide. I think it's genocide. And that's what makes the show great. We have different opinions. So if we have a third opinion from someone else, I'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear it. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com, or you can email us an audio clip, like Aaron was saying, or on the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/synthaholics. Is there anything else about Dear Doctor that we can get into, Aaron?
I don't. I mean, other than we get a great exposition of Phlox and the Denobians, and kind of like we figure out more about that race. I think this is the first time we really get a good look at it. And obviously, like I said, it's strange how the show is paced, and then it gives you that like last, you know, dark ending that you didn't expect.
Yeah, it's really dark, and
it seems so light.
Yeah. Well, like, let's talk about that Phlox thing. Like, that's super interesting. Like, the Nobulan people, where they, you know, they each get married to three or four people, and then they have this giant family unit. And as expensive as things are, and as, you know, how everything's going up except for the minimum wage, it almost seems like that should be a viable option for us. Family units
I don't know. I don't know if that would work for humans. I mean, I think we're totally different temperament. I think we're very jealous people. We're very possessive.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just financially, it just seems like that would work so much better, because like everything is just getting so insanely expensive for, you know, a lot of times, you know, like 50 years ago, you know, the man had a job and the wife stayed at home. Now,
right.
And, you know, they were fine. They had a house, they had a car, maybe two cars, and with just one person holding down a job. Now we've got two people holding down a job, and, you know, they might still be stuck in an apartment. Maybe just have one car. They have to share it. Like it's insane. Like how things have radically changed. In just 50 years.
Yeah.
And in 50 more years, I mean, like, how it's going to be like two people working, and then, they don't even have a car at all. Like, you know, they may not even, they need to be renting a cardboard box. I mean, like, it's going to be like, what's it going to be like in another 50 years? It's kind of scary. Like, how are we going to afford all the things? Maybe culture will have to, like, you know, take a different step in a different direction to make things work. Because financially, for regular people, how is it going to work?
I think it's a little different. I mean, for what I think, there's two different subjects here. I mean, one is how the American, 50 years ago, how Americans could, you know, there could be one breadwinner making money and then
living comfortably, and
they live relatively comfortably. And then I think that has changed. I think we don't have unions anymore. We don't have anybody looking out for workers' rights anymore. Wages have been stagnant for over 20 years. I mean, people have made a lot more money. I mean, people might be working more, but they are making as much money.
And housing goes up, food goes up.
Sure.
Trump starting all these, like, these stupid trade wars. So, like, everything's going to go up. And enacting tariffs, and so people are going to start tariffing us right back. And it's just going to be, everything's going to get worse.
Well, and that's basically this is going way off subject of the episode, but I mean, I think that's just like 20, 30 years of politicians playing out to people with the biggest checkbooks, which are usually, business CEOs. Leaders.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're looking for breaks, and they're looking for them to make more money and their shareholders make more money while we don't make as much.
I don't think it's off topic. I think this is what happened on Denoblia. Denoblia, and this is why they had to come up with these family units.
Well, I'd like to add something.
Maybe they were jealous once before. And then,
I'd like to add something to what you were just saying there, because it's on the family aspect of things with Denoblia. I think we are seeing something maybe not quite like that, but you know, I get to see a lot of families and parents and people who are go to this, you know, my children's school, and you know, you have lots of people who they had kids with their exes, and for one reason or another, it didn't work out, and they still have their ex that's in their life, but they, you know, but their ex maybe got remarried or has another boyfriend, girlfriend. And the same thing with that person, they move on and they have a relationship. So basically those children have two families that usually get shared, one way or the other. So, you know, half the week they spend with one parent, the other half they spend the other. So it's a common thing. I see more and more. So maybe we're kind of going that slant anyways.
Yeah, maybe.
Just not as, it's not as amicable.
Not as inclusive as the Denobulans.
Denobulans are just like, yeah, okay, we got married and now you're going to get married again. You
know? Yeah, it's like open relationships for everybody. You get an open relationship. You get an open relationship. You get an open relationship. It's great. Everyone's happy. Everyone's like, the orgies are the best. But who knows? I just think it's an interesting to think about, because like one of the other things we were talking about before, I think before the show started, was that sort of like the guy who created Wonder Woman kind of imposed that upon his first wife, where he married some other woman, and he was like, you can either accept this or you can leave. And she accepted it, and she's like, well, she's going to be the stay-at-home mom. So like basically like they, you know, both worked. He and his original wife worked, and then she became the stay-at-home mom. The second wife became a stay-at-home mom, and she took care of all the children. So like, it's an interesting family dynamic, and it just seems like something like that might have to, you know, happen in society just to afford living places. Because I mean, I know you're saying how you kind of have like multiple children have multiple families with the breaking up and everything, but that doesn't help when there's two people. Like when in another 50 years, when two people can't afford an apartment and a car. Because I mean, you know, 50 years ago it was one person, a nice car or a couple of nice cars and a house. Now it's two people, and sometimes they can't even swing that. So I mean, it'll be interesting to see like what happens, what kind of cultural differences could happen when things become more desperate.
There's a counter argument to what you're suggesting as well.
Sure.
Polyamorous societies. I don't know about Nobula, because that's a totally different world and different species. But usually end up
not working.
People
great.
Say, and I'm not. Yeah, it ends up more violent. Violent societies. They're more violent because we become more
jealous. Jealous,
right? Because of basically what happens is one person becomes, or a select few males become the top males to get all the women, and then there's a ton of sub males that for one reason or other, they don't get as many women as the other males. So they become more male content over what they're not getting.
They try to alpha it up, and then they try to kill the alpha. Yeah. I mean, it's sad.
I don't know much about that. That's what I've heard and I've read a little bit about, but I don't know that much about it.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's not anything I know a ton about.
And, you know, I maybe sound like I'm advocating this. And, you know, I mean, from what I read, too, like, it doesn't super work a whole lot because bad things happen. Like, someone becomes jealous and things happen. You know, but ideally, maybe people should just chill out. It's going to be hard to survive. It's going to be hard to survive one day. I don't know.
I think Roddenberry was trying to get to that point. I think he really wanted that.
Oh, he definitely wanted it in his personal life because he definitely liked the ladies.
Yeah, no, I think that's what he wanted, and that was obviously during the '60s, and we had the free love movement and stuff like that. So, but I don't know if it necessarily works all the time. I'm not saying monogamous relationships for everybody works because some people it's different. But I think as a society, polyamory might be.
It's not socially accepted. An issue. Yeah, it's not socially accepted. I don't think it's technically legal in America. I don't think. I mean, like, if you're not married, I guess you can do whatever you want. But I mean, like,
you can't have like six wives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that part's illegal. There's no like binding a thing. It's just pretty much all polyamory is going to be just like, you know, people are deciding to just date multiple people at the same time. There's no legal binding like there is on the Denobula, and there would have to be a huge, political, social shift for that even become a possibility. And I don't necessarily endorse it, but I think it's interesting to think about, especially just in light to, you know, how like, you know, the lower middle class is in America now. And how hard it is to afford a house and, you know, a car and other things like that at the same time, you know? So
I know I was going to say, I think that's what we're seeing from more of that is that, you know, both men and women are both going to work, and they're both busting their asses, and they can barely make, you know, enough money to, you know, to have a comfortable lifestyle. I mean, some can. Not, I'm saying not everybody, but there's sure. a lot that can't. So
yeah, I'm not saying this never is successful. I'm just saying a lot of lower income people, it's not super successful, I think.
There's definitely a large portion of the society that has not been able to achieve the American ideal dream. And it's very frustrating for a lot of people. I honestly think that's why you got the populace who brought Trump to power, because they're sick and tired of the promises of people like, you know, Hillary Clinton and the people who were around her, and they give you good lip service, but you're not seeing anything out of it. And I'm not knocking necessarily Hillary Clinton. I'm just saying that it's more of a institutional thing that needs to be shaken up. And I don't know if it ever will, honestly, not by Trump and not by anybody else.
Not the way things are going.
I think the power. Yeah, I think the powers to be don't want things to change.
Yeah. And that's the sad part. And they don't want things to change. So they're not going to change. They're just going to get progressively worse in the way they're going. Sanctuary districts for everybody, 2020.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Or 2024 or whatever
exactly.
It was.
Exactly.
Yeah, sanctuary districts are coming.
A lot of people are saying that Trump is going to get reelected. So,
oh my God.
Yeah, maybe we might see, that episode take place.
Oh man, that's going to be scary. Good God. I want to go.
I know, right?
I need to find Dax, and I need to be like, Dax, take me with you to the future. I don't want to live here anymore.
Get me out of here.
Get me out of here. I'll do like the old jump on them when they're transporting thing. Oh, that'd be the best.
Yeah, jump right on him just as transport. Or, you know, if you think about it, Sarah Silverman in the Voyager episode where they go back in time.
Yeah, yeah.
That episode, it kind of like, you know, gave her kind of the shaft because, you know, her life wasn't going to be too good in a couple of years because, you know, you had the rise of Khan Noonien and Singh and all the genetic augments and
how they wiped out a huge part of the world.
Basically start World War III. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, see you later. Have a great life. No, you won't. No,
it'll,
you won't.
It'll be miserable. I kind of think they don't think about that because every time they go back in time, like they don't acknowledge the Khan Noonien thing ever really happened. Because, I mean, you know, Star Trek IV.
We're about to.
Well, in Star Trek IV, they go back to the 80s. You know, I guess it's the 90s
where Khan just was.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It'd be interesting. See what happens with that, because they always jump back right before the Khan thing happens when they go back in time or long enough after so it doesn't matter, because I guess the Bell riots were in the, you know, like it was 2020 or 2024, I think, so that's like, you know, like 20 yeah. something years after the eugenics wars, so
right, exactly.
Interesting stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, whatever. Yeah, I don't think we're going to solve all these problems right now. I think the Nobulans are an interesting race. Obviously, they have a little more mellow view of everything, except when it comes to extinction events. They're like, yeah, let it happen.
Yeah, just let them die. Life finds a way.
Let them die. Kirk in
Star Trek VI.
Undiscovered Country.
Yeah, let them die.
Let them die.
Maybe Phlox was channeling some Kirk.
Yeah,
beforehand.
Yeah, right.
Oh, it's so great. This episode's been a little short on laughs. Lots of heavy talk. Although last time we had all the sex.
It's a
jokes.
Heavy episode. It's not as silly. I mean, other than the little love interest with the crewman Cutler there.
Well,
I don't know.
We got all our sex jokes out last time, so we get to have a serious episode this week, guys. So it's cool. It's all good.
Yeah.
We don't have to record a warning for this episode.
Yeah, no.
This is a vegetation safe episode.
Yes, your vegetation's fine in this episode. But if you're genetically compromised and might be facing an extinction event, you might want to avoid Dr. Phlox.
and Archer at all costs, because that duo.
Yes.
Phlox will write the prescription and Archer will notarize it. No for you.
That dynamic duo. You are going to die.
The ambiguously genocidal duo.
Yeah. Oh my God, so funny.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. Yeah, there's not a lot to really say other than this is a very confusing episode. If anybody has the chance episode, get back to us. Let us know what you think, if they did the right thing. I'd love to hear a counter argument for all this.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a counter argument. So Aaron doesn't think they did the right thing, but he doesn't think it's genocide. I don't think they did the right thing, and I think it's genocide. So we need a third option or a fourth option. I'd love to hear those options. We'd love to get some of those emails back, some more emails, if you guys mm-hmm. have any thoughts about that. And speaking of emails, we actually do have another email from not George R. R. Martin himself.
Okay,
the email from not George R. R. Martin. Okay, so here it is. Format changes, if any, for Syntholics Podcast. I think you should lead off with anything Star Trek related. We have a little while before the season 2 of Discovery. No real word on the next goofy ass JJ Trek films, and even less on the Q Trek, aka what I'm calling Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek, if it ever happens. But there's always speculation, gossip, rumor, and whatever else studios have pushed out for mass consumption that you can follow up by talking about whatever you think is currently out or interested to you guys, either individually or together. Lost in Space, Black Mirror, the newer X-Files, Game of Thrones, Westworld, which is like a much slower boil BSG. Comics, graphic novels, authors, anime, animation, music, whatever pop culture that is interest of you. Compare and contrast them to each other, linking them back to Star Trek when possible. If you're already watching Game of Thrones, for example, then hopefully it won't require a great amount of extra work for you. Empowered by that patented Syntholics banter, I think it'll all start the blood flowing for some new interesting ideas. Insert David erection joke here. whatever. Empowered by the patented Syntholic banter, I think there'll be start of a blood flowing to some new interesting areas. I hope the Nobulans have more than one penis.
Do you think they do?
I don't know. They've got three wives, so maybe they can please them all at once.
Oh, you think it's just like one big...
Yes. It's a three-way. Now back to the email. It's a four-way. I'm sorry. He's got three penises and three wives. So he just gets it all done at once. That's why the mating season's so crazy. Remember? He said like he gets them all pregnant at the same time. That's great. That's why it's so complicated.
They're on his fingers.
He just fingers them all and then uses the penis and the other. That's great. It's great.
Finger bang, yeah.
Finger bang and actual bang. That's great. Mm-hmm. So back to the email. Whenever there's a substantial Star Trek news, episodes, or ideas, you can make the whole episode about Star Trek if you'd like. Arrange in any order you'd like just to keep the stream of consciousness flowing. Keep the humor flowing. Continue to enjoy the content, but don't take it too seriously. Better and better ideas will come from there. I think that you'll wind up with even more solid show for it. Does that make sense? My feelings are whenever you talk about an old episode of Star Trek or anything, it's like the scene in the movie AI where the aliens come to Earth and find the main character robot frozen in ice. They wake him at his request, reanimate his human mother. She figures largely in his mind, but the aliens warn him that she'll only last a day and the process cannot be repeated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other things that can be inspired by what has passed before, but the old cannot coexist with the new. Or if so, for a very short time, unless you're highlighting a foundational plot point or game changer that is also influenced through a fiction, it's very difficult to make it live again based on its own merits and to give it new life. Vic Mignogna must have wished to some aliens that Star Trek would continue, because that shit felt real. By the way, while I'm trashing the idea of a deep-cut Star Trek podcast, I actually enjoy the Thomas Riker episode, and the whole idea of Thomas Riker was absolutely absurd, even for you, even for Star Trek. You guys did a great job in making it funny. By the way, too, and somewhat unrelated, it isn't entirely clear to me if you guys knew this, but the phrase, you can only get this, or you can get that, it is not only from Fatboy Slim Song. It's originally by a group called Black Sheep from the 1991 song, The Choice Is Yours. Both versions are good. I just wanted to make sure they got their credit.
Yeah, I knew that was an older song. I just didn't know the band. But yeah, Fatboy Slim made it more popular recently.
Yes. My suggestions do not require a lot of hard changes, just an adjustment in perspective. I think that if the emails do not read well, please ask me to resubmit, and I'll do my best to fix it. Let me know what you guys think. Thanks for taking my suggestion seriously. Live long and hola! R.R., a.k.a. not George R.R. Martin.
Thank you.
Thanks for another great long email.
Yeah, no, I love that. And yeah, for sure, we've been talking a lot, but we got to start figuring out what direction we want to take things. We just, we do feel that sometimes that the show could get a little breath of fresh air here and there.
Absolutely. And let us know, let other people know what you think. Like, do you guys, I mean, we've had a couple people get back to us saying they wanted to hear about more things. You know, they wouldn't mind like two episodes a month not being on Star Trek as long as it's still us. So that's interesting. And I would love to get, maybe we should do a poll, like find out what people are most interested in of some of these new things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that could be interesting if we can get people to kind of like throw ideas on what they want to see most from us, because that would be fun. You know, if they're here for Star Trek, but if they want to hear other stuff from us, maybe we could, you know, throw polls out and say, hey, look, what do you want, you know, the non-Star Trek thing to be for next month? And then that gives us time to get the poll, you know, filled and see what they want. And then that'll give us time to like watch it and digest it and talk about it later.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That could be a way of doing it too. So that could be a lot of fun. And speaking of Thomas Riker, something that I really wanted to bring up, I was in a conversation with somebody on Facebook. I don't remember who, but we were talking about Thomas Riker, and I was like, oh, what if they did an episode where he gets saved and they beam him up from the Cardassian colony. Mm-hmm. And then like he gets split again and the transporter beam gets deflected again. So they rescue Thomas Riker. He's saved. But then there's another copy of him who doesn't think he got rescued.
Still down in the labor camp.
Yes. It's still down in the labor camp. And then they find him and there's three Rikers. Oh, that would be so great. Riker keeps getting split. This would be a great fan fiction. I hope someone will write this. So anyone out there who's a fan fiction writer, Duchess, if you're listening to this, maybe you could do like the third Riker split when he gets saved from there. That would just be comic gold, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed the Thomas Riker one. I like when we take an obscure character like Thomas Riker or Moriarty or the Traveler, and we kind of just like deconstruct it.
Dive into the character, and it's like, well, what's going on here?
Right, exactly. I do like those little one-offs we do when we kind of like, it's not enough to get into a whole long series about them, but it's enough just to talk about for one episode. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, thanks, Mr. R.R. Martin, or not the R.R. Martin, for more feedback. You know, I love the feedback you've been giving us. And some of the other email feedback we've been getting. I just hope that we can get more feedback on the group to get a larger consensus on what people would like to hear that's more up to date with everything. Because I still need to finish Altered Carbon. Altered Carbon, I've been really enjoying that show. I just had never gotten around to finishing it yet.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. I really want to see Lost in Space. I haven't had a chance to watch that yet either. I haven't had a chance to watch Westworld Season 2 yet. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's on my plate that I need to watch. And getting to talk about it on the show would give incentive to watch it for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah. Well, we'll have to start, like, you know, maybe making plans for all that stuff. And, you know, obviously we'll talk about Star Trek as well and anything else that's pertinent for the time.
And I like the idea of linking it back to Star Trek. Oh, it's a Star Trek podcast. We'll be talking about something else, so we can always link it back to Star Trek. Oh, the Star Trek actor's here, and like, oh, he did this, and it was funny. You know, that could be a fun way of linking it back to Star Trek, or doing like, you know, like if we on every non-Star Trek episode, we do like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon to link it back to Star Trek somehow, even if it's not a direct link.
Funny. That'd be funny.
That could be like a segment. So like when are we doing a non-Star Trek episode, it's like, here, how we link this back to Star Trek.
Yeah. What characters or what people in production worked on Star Trek?
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. If there is a link.
Well, I mean, at least we can do a link for actors. Like, you know, this actor was in this, who was in this, who was in this, who was with, you know, this character from Star Trek.
Right. So. Absolutely.
So we could at least link it by actors. It'd be kind of a fun way to link it. If there's nothing direct we could do, we could at least, you know, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon it.
Yeah, exactly.
7 degrees of Star Trek.
There you go. Nice. Yeah, maybe play a game and just, like, name actors and see if we can see how they're connected.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, so I guess the takeaway from this episode is don't go see Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Go to redlettermedia.com and watch their review on it, and that's all you need.
Definitely watch Dear Doctor and get back to us if you have any thoughts or ruminations about this episode, because it sticks with you what the decision was in the end.
Yeah, genocide, yay or nay, let us know.
We need to sit down and we need to figure out what we're going to do if any other topics other than Star Trek. Like I said, we've talked about other stuff too before, so it's not totally unheard from. We focus a lot on Star Trek.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just lots of interesting things to think about. So yeah, let us know. Again, you can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can send a direct email to us. You can record a message and attach it as an audio file and send that over to us. We'll be happy to play that on the air. And then we respond to your voice. You can hear yourself on the show. I mean, it's something we've done before. We did it on our 100th episode. And you can do this anytime, really. Just email us an audio file of your thoughts, and we'll play it on the air. It doesn't have to be on a special episode. It could be any episode you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to hear your voice and play it and respond to what you have to say.
Absolutely. Again, the Facebook group is facebook.com/group/synthaholics. Our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com, although our intro is done by Dave Wilkes. On Twitter, you can find the show at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird 2004, and our Holly Michelle, who is still in the midst of moving, she's at Lunar Thistle.
Absolutely, and please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. It would be much appreciated. Also, if you have any money to give us, we'd be very appreciative if you go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics. And throw us a buck a month, if more, if you can afford. We definitely appreciate that. And lastly, a great way to help the show is word of mouth. Let people know that, hey, Synthaholics, these guys are great. Give them a listen and enjoy the show.
They can do lots of dick jokes, and then they can do introspective stuff about genocide. I mean, like, what's anything in between dick jokes and genocide, we'll talk about.
What could go wrong, Dave?
Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. We can hit any, you can pretty much hit any range, and polyamory too. I mean, like, any range of topics we can touch on.
Yeah. I don't, we definitely touch on a lot of topics. It's maybe some that we shouldn't do, but we do anyways.
We're experts at polyamory, butt sex, and
yeah, exactly.
And genocide.
Like last episode, we were talking about, all caves are vaginas.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, anything and everything. Even if it's not a topic, we'll make it a topic.
Yes, we will. Well, maybe we should close out, Dear Doctor.
We'll close the book on this one. Oh, wait.
Yeah, Robbie.
That's never not gone. Yeah. He's coming to you next week, because I'll be on vacation.
Yeah, Dave's off. He's sick of you people. He's got to take it off and drink.
Now I'll be going down to Virginia Beach. If any of you guys are down at Virginia Beach, come say hi.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We did it. We talked about Dear Doctor. We didn't die. He didn't kill us. No mercy. Right, exactly.
No mercy for you. Oh, man. It's a weird episode.
Take no prisoners. Take no shit.
It's a weird episode. It's hard to kind of, process.
It is, because it starts off so silly, and because he's eating his pet's food, and then it's like, yes, I'm going to kill everyone on this planet, except for the Mank.
I'm going to kill everybody. On purpose.
I'm going to let them die.
Let them die.
Let them die.
Jim, they're dying. Let them die.
Let them die.
That's so funny.
I want someone to do a super cut of that, where they cut, him just let evolution take its course, and then Kirk going, let them die.
You should just get that cut and just keep on playing that through there.
Back and forth.
Let them die.
Let them die. Actually, I should just do that.
Let them die.
Just do it as a joke video on the Synthaholics YouTube thing. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Speaking of YouTube.